listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 65. This minute opens with Milburn screaming, "Oh God!" and ends with Holloway inspecting his eye. And once more, I'm joined by Milburn and Fifield experts and screen cap master, mother, aka Clara, of Studio Utami.
Wow, what a flattering introduction.
Yeah, we've had some great title cards. If you're just listening through your podcast feed, yeah, go on the website, have a look. There's been some fun screen caps. So, where were we last time? We were basically watching the demise of our favorite boys, I believe.
Yeah, it's a bit of nearly a Laurel and Hardy sort of synergy going on here.
Basically, but then it ends with actual death.
Yes, which is, you know, it makes sense within the Alien universe that that happens. There's detail within the first second of this minute where the hammerpede regrows its head and it looks so phallic. It just looks like the foreskin around a penis.
Not good. Yeah. And then it penetrates Milburn's suit, and then it penetrates Milburn's mouth. So it's just penetration everywhere. This is the giggeriest minute we have had yet.
Yeah, I think Giga would be super proud of this moment.
Yes. And a weird note is that Milburn's eyes turn cloudy. I used to think, without watching it really closely, I used to think his eyes were rolling up into his head. But no, if you watch really closely, the iris and the pupils, they turn pale. They don't actually go white, but it's like a very pale blue.
Yeah, that's the kind of look which I think Elizabeth Shaw ends up having as well. At least in a lot of David's drawings, it looks like her eyes had rolled up into the back of her head, but maybe it's more like what's happened here.
So I've got no real theories there. It could be some sort of mutagen effect. I don't know what happens when you get like a humongous snake forced down your throat. Maybe that's what happens. We just have not documented this medically.
I don't think we can do any trials without getting arrested.
It would just be a mystery for it. Well, I mean, we could contact whoever animated that and go, "You know something we don't."
We could just harass them. Yes. Tell us your secrets.
So, Fifield doesn't get the pale eyes, I don't think. I think his eyes stay pretty dark. But, he collapses face first into the black goo, which I don't recommend doing. And the weird thing is it accelerates the melting of the visor. I don't know what that is. My theory is maybe that the mutagen responds to the environment, sort of like, you know, like a single-celled organism or maybe an amoeba. It's sort of aware. It's not sentient, but it knows what's going on. And maybe it's trying to get closer to a host. That's my only theory.
Yeah, they kind of presented that idea in Alien, The Cold Forge, that the pathogen is made out of these microbes that actively seek out biological material in which to transform and mutate.
Right. Yeah, because it does feel sort of self-guided, almost like nanite or nanotechnology. Yeah, I really like that idea of this being some kind of techno-organic nanotechnology. That is a property we don't see often in technology. I mean, there's the grey goo scenario, but it's a fascinating one, and one that I could see having a lot of applications. I like to think maybe the engineers, before they were terraforming other planets, maybe they had very good intentions. Like, this was some kind of miracle cure for everything. You know, you take this nanotechnology, just inject it into yourself, and it will clean your body of cancer or any disease. It's self-repairing. And then after a certain point, they started taking this cultural idea, basically, to other worlds and not seeing anything wrong with interfering.
Yeah, it seems to be this sort of harnessing of, you know, higher technology, kind of the literal story of Prometheus stealing fire from the gods and then using it for the benefit of mankind, and, you know, the engineers could have stolen it from another species and used it for their own benefit as well.
That could be interesting, that they don't have full control or understanding over it. So they're working with a technology, yeah, that might have come from someone else, maybe their creators.
I really like that idea of the pathogen accelerating the decay of the helmet, because in the minute that we just covered before, Fifield is standing there while the hammerpiece head's being cut off and the acid sprays onto the helmet. And I always thought it was the acid that melted the helmet, but then it's resistant and it sizzles, but then he dips his face into a puddle of black goo, and then all of a sudden it really starts to react and melt and form around his face, which is kind of like what we saw with Kane and the facehugger in Alien. So it's just really interesting how that occurs. I was going to say, I really love this look on Milburn's face when he's got the hammerpede that slithered into his suit. So Coroner and I did some research in regards to the suits. These are called SE suits, which are supposed to be quite resilient to different space atmospheres.
Yeah, it's supposed to be worn in the vacuum of space. It should be pretty much impenetrable.
Yeah, so this here, the hammerpede actually being able to get into his suit by breaking its arm, shows a measure of intelligence. Also, you know, heading for a nice, warm, moist, dark area to habitate.
And it also does a little ring around Milburn's head before going down his throat, which I find interesting because it's just sort of trying to suss out, what is this creature? How do I get in here? Oh, there's two little holes on each side. Oh, no, that won't do. Oh, yep, there's one at the front. There we go. God, going into his mouth. It goes for like 3 seconds. Hang on, I'm going to bloody time that. Let's go. Okay. 104.14. 170. So 3 seconds. It's just piling on in there.
It's really funny. The hammerpiece head has been like smooshed up against the glass, and it just looks like really vaginal. That's my favorite scene. I just want to let everyone know that's my most favorite face fuck in the entire franchise.
Yes, that can be the title of the episode. Most famous face fuck.
Well, I mean, you know, a close second would be Kane, and then the third would probably be Aurum in Alien Covenant.
Aurum has a great death scene, and maybe I have to bring you back for that, because I think you're our nasties expert. Critters and nasties and all that.
Yes.
I was going to say, now, if I was a sensible man, I would use the next scene we see, the beautiful image, that spooky image of the sunrise over LV-223, but no, I'm just going to let you choose.
I've got a pause on exactly that, 18 seconds in, and you can see the ringed planet and the sun, and you can see a peak of another planet to the left, just, you know, over the horizon. And I really love how they used Whitey Rum as well for the setting of LV-223, because it's very Lawrence of Arabia to be kind of drawing
parallels. This right here is very much, yeah. So that planet, is that LV-426?
That's what it says in the script, that this planet revolves around the same sun which LV-426 revolves around.
Yeah, they're just, right now the derelict is just sitting there and they're looking right at it. Although I guess it's not giving them that much more information if they visited that site. I mean, you're seeing basically the same stuff. I do like the idea of them having, the engineers, having this solar system basically where they just have their military bases, carry out their experiments, do all that sort of stuff. Continuing that sort of Anthrax Island concept that Ridley seems to love, that they've got a home planet, but everything else is quarantined on other worlds.
This part where Charlie has got his head in his hands. I can kind of sympathize with that. That's just that, you know, I've drunk way too much last night. What the fuck did I do?
he's regretting it now. He will definitely regret it later. I can't get a good look at his necklaces. He's wearing two, but I think, no, it's not a crucifix. I think it's a ring, maybe. Yes, it's a ring.
It looks like a coin or something.
One looks like a coin. The other one's maybe a ring. I don't think there's any real significance there, but you shouldn't sleep with necklaces on. You might choke. It's very unsafe.
Yes, we do not advise it.
Yes.
I just want to draw everyone's attention to, just in the back, I've paused it on 29 seconds into this minute. There are some fertility dolls which actually go back to the original greenstone myths or mythologies, in which there was a meteorite that hit the earth and, you know, liquefied the crust and the soil, and all of these greenstones came raining down back onto the earth. And a lot of the tribes around the time, or human tribes around the time, have attributed this stone to fertility and pregnancy and love and life and all of this sort of stuff. So it's really interesting, this sort of like, this is subliminal messaging. You've got Shaw with very beautiful light shining on her, lying on the bed. She looks asleep, kind of like, you know, that painting, The Nightmare.
Yeah, she's actually got the exact same pose. I should probably put that in the footnotes.
Yeah, so you've got the pose of the nightmare there. You've got Charlie Holloway, the man standing in between cast and shadow. And then you've got these fertility dolls to the right. And they've got all of this stuff, all these layers coming into play in this one scene. And it's just this one second contains so much. I just love it.
Oh, yeah. The set design on this is really great. And so my theory was that Weyland did decorate this ship with artifacts and stuff, in which case putting the fertility idols in Shaw's room, it's a dirty move, Peter.
Or it could have been Shaw collecting these items because she was not able to have children.
Which is just sad. So either way, it's like, it's someone being an asshole to Shaw, or Shaw just making herself sad.
Yeah, exactly.
We also get a real good look at that fucking upside down plant that distracts me every single time.
I think that is, let me just look it up. There is this plant, which is called a pitcher plant, called the Nepenthes, which was bred from two other varieties of pitcher plant. And it's known to be a flesh-eating sort of plant.
Oh.
So I think it's like really cool. We've got so many symbology going into play. So the Nepenthes pitcher plant also kind of looks very phallic, but then you've got this hybrid species, which has been named after H.R. Geiger.
Oh, really?
And then it's also gotten, because you've got a hybrid species, you know, this kind of like hybridization, which is visited a lot in Alien Covenant, the Nepenthes is actually in David's drawings. So we've got the beginning of this idea kind of birthed into Prometheus, this homage to Geiger.
It's very cyclical.
Yeah, and so phallic, and, you know, it eats flesh, and there's all of these sorts of very alien sorts of topics are just kind of crammed in there into this annoying upside down plant, which could also be a metaphor for something that we haven't really touched on either. So I'll give you a link to that.
Yeah, that's great. That made me think, though, that, and this is sort of building on what we said in the last episode about how Alien is about confronting things, but it's not like a human centipede or Slither or something that's very, it's disgusting, it's gross out, it's exploitative, it's just, it offends the senses. Whereas Alien, I think, has stood the test of time because it shows us things that are innately unpleasant or challenging. So there is cannibalization or just predator prey, the sexuality, genitals, bodily fluids, all that sort of stuff. But it's much more cerebral. in how it handles all of that. And I think that's one of its greatest strengths. And even I would say Prometheus is like the big action blockbuster on almost the same level as Aliens. So that, you know, James Cameron, of course, definitely knows how to do the big blockbuster. And even then, it retains those themes, those very subtle, unnerving themes.
Yeah, it's just, it's less literal and in your face. And I love the subtlety of it, because you can watch Prometheus at, or any of the Alien movies, at face value and just be entertained, you know, because it's a horror movie. But then if you want to do all of this, you know, deep dive and study into all of this stuff that is included in the building of the set and the building of the characters and telling of the story, there's just so much more to uncover.
On Holloway's right shoulder, you see a crucifix tattoo, which is very interesting, and also three scars. So we know the only time he really got injured was a few scenes back in the sandstorm, but this is like an old scar, and I don't think he... Well, how would you get cut through the spacesuit?
Maybe it's from Shaw. Maybe some rough and tumble.
Maybe it was from last night. Theory confirmed.
Just before, have you discussed what happened, the scene that was cut out with Shaw having a more rough time with Charlie?
Oh, yeah.
So could that have been from the slap?
No, she slaps him across the face, but then they do this sort of passionate, aggressive makeout session. So, yeah, maybe it was just from last year.
But
I mean, you'd have to tell the makeup artists, we want these, it has to look like this. And so there's continuity there. Someone has to keep track of this. There's a story there,
yeah,
somewhere.
Well, you heard about the scar of destiny, right? The trope that they have in film.
Oh.
Where, just for example, in Star Wars, who's the guy who's a stormtrooper? Boyega. Yeah. He has this three blood marks across his helmet before he takes it off from someone grabbing onto him. So it's
And then I guess Harry Potter is the same sort of deal.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in Princess Mononoke, she also has a scar across her face. So it's sort of this scar of destiny. They're about to go through something really life-changing that changes the course of what they've always known. So I feel like that...
Well, in this case...
in Charlie's case... He was challenged. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe in gods or in man-made creations of religion. But then he's got a cross on his arm. He's got all of these things that are like conflicting with his beliefs. It makes sense that he would be challenged like this.
Yeah, it is very interesting, the placement of those scars right there on that tattoo, which you normally wouldn't do... What in fiction, in real life, these things happen, but yeah, that they decided to have the scar cutting across the crucifix. So maybe there's some symbolism there. Maybe it's implying he once had faith. Maybe that's sort of how he and Shaw bonded initially, that they were both good Christians, and then maybe Holloway lost his way at some point in the past. Anyway, he takes his ring off. I don't know if there's any significance to the ring. I think maybe you mentioned...
Yeah, so in the ring, I think, is supposed to belong to his father, who was in the army. This is as much as we could piece together out of him taking the ring off and having a look at the back. And it's the initials says... Oh, I've got the ring on right now because I made a copy. I'm a geek like that.
Nice.
So take it off. Hold on. So it says Captain or Capt A.C. Holloway.
Oh.
Is what's engraved in the bottom.
So,
and then it's a plain ring on the top. So
is it a military? Is it military jewelry, or is it just happens to be engraved on the back?
I think Capt A.C. Holloway could have been a descendant of his captain. I would say piloting a ship, because A.C. Like, A would have been the first name and C would have been the middle name, and here's Charlie Holloway. Maybe Charles was the middle name, but we don't know who the A is.
Yeah, because it looks like an antique. It doesn't seem like this just came from his father. It's probably generations back. Maybe someone born in the far distant year 2000. Symptoms so far for Holloway. He's sweating, and he's got the bloodshot eyes, so that's why he takes a real close look. And then just crawling out is... And you don't see it, the minute cuts there, but we will continue to talk about it because screw you, I make the rules. So just the first second of the next minute, I'll allow it, is actually sitting on the iris, so not it's obviously come out of the pupil, and that's just sitting there, but underneath the liquid of the iris, you see it penetrate through the membrane of the eye. Ugh. And there's a musical sting, and he jumps back. And then he's distracted by, you know, whatever else goes on in the next minute. But, oh, I wouldn't forget about that. If I saw that, I think I'd do, like, a nervous wee just there on the spot.
It's one hell of a jump scare, too, because one of the things I believe they go into the viral stuff for Alien Covenant when they're doing Phobos, that test.
Yeah.
They're talking about what makes them feel uncomfortable and what are they afraid of. And this is definitely a fear that people have of something burrowing into their body.
I think when it comes to fear, most people probably don't know what they're really afraid of. I think everyone in their lives can speak to this, where some things that you built up in your head are so terrifying. You go through and you're like, oh, that's not so bad. Like, a lot of people are afraid of needles and they just get so anxious, and then it's over and done. And they go, that it was unpleasant. I didn't look forward to it, but it's generally the build-up. Whereas, it amazes me, all kinds of weird medical stories I hear where someone is clearly very sick, they've got some very shocking physical symptoms, and they're just like, nah, it's fine, just walk it off.
Like that lady who had her eye that was stinging, and then it turns out there were these microscopic bees that were drinking her tears.
I know another guy who had a pet tarantula, and tarantulas can eject their leg hairs. Sure, that of course, nature, you do you. And that's a self-defense mechanism. So what they thought was, well, this guy had just, his eye was just constantly weeping. It was so uncomfortable. He went to the doctors. They couldn't see anything. They just put him on some painkillers. And then this was just so irritating and uncomfortable. So he kept trying to seek help. And someone said, okay, so what? Do you have any pets? Do you have this, that? And he was like, oh, I have a tarantula. Like, ah, okay. So they were able to then find those hairs, and then with tweezers, not your regular ones, but just medical tweezers, pull the hairs out of his sclera. And in this...
I'm shuddering in pain just thinking about it, because yeah. I've got contacts in.
Not good. But Holloway's just like, yeah, just walk it off. Yeah, I'll just put a helmet on where I can't touch my eyes and get out there, I guess. Actually, no, they don't wear helmets anymore because they're... Oh, no, they have to get to the pyramid. Yeah, no. So he's... Have fun with that. I wonder if you'd extracted this little worm right now, is that all? Is that the only part of the infection? Could he have saved himself? Could there have been early intervention?
You know what? I feel like it could be like, it could have been anything, like a worm actually inside his body, like a usually harmless, you know, when you get worms, worms aren't exactly harmless, but if the goo had touched it.
Well, we have all sorts of, like in our microbiome, in our stomach, we've got all sorts of little bugs living.
Yeah, there, could it have just mutated everything that was in his stomach at the time?
Oh, that's a really good, because he's ingested it. So, oh no, I'm just thinking of something far worse. Like, he doesn't get mutated, but all his gut flora is mutated. So he's just vomiting all these creatures that, oh no. It's like in Harry Potter when Ron, he's vomiting frogs. I can't even remember why he's vomiting frogs, but it's like that. Yeah. But a million times worse. Oh, this is an awful episode. Why did you want to come back for this? What's wrong with you?
Because we know that Shaw is pregnant with a life form, could it have mutated all of his seed?
Right. So we're talking every microbial, every little thing inside of him. Ooh. And then Shaw, it's just... Okay, so then... Oh, no, that would make sense. So the sperm has been mutated. Then it goes into her ovum. And that's it. So it's kind of contained within the ovum. It doesn't infect her elsewhere. Good thing they had good old-fashioned missionary, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because this story could have been very different.
Yeah, well, they could have introduced the butt burster.
Oh no! Not the shit weighs us! I predicted this! God. Or mouth babies. Oh no.
Oh dear. Do you think it would be kind of like what happened to Hallett?
Oh, right. Hang on. Is there some kind of imagery they're implying there, being that he is a homosexual man? What are they trying to say? We'll get to that in about 6 months' time. Delve into
that. One of the things I wanted to bring up as well with Charlie Holloway and his squiggly eye baby is that H.R. Geiger and his construction of the alien life cycle, in the very top of the image, which I'm sure Connor will post to the blog, you can see this eye looking down on the whole life cycle, and this eye has this little squiggly thing coming out. And someone had mentioned to me on Facebook that this may be a homage to H.R. Geiger's work. This is the beginning of the alien cycle.
The eye seems to be rolled upward. Am I imagining that?
It kind of looks like that, yeah.
Yeah, because he did a tarot card series, and I've shown you that The Magician is what it's called, the tarot card painting that I've got on my wall. And I've only recently noticed this, but he has a thing with eyes rolling up into the head.
Mm.
Kind of like Melbourne earlier this episode. I think that's just coincidence, but the L... What is it? The LV or the LIV paintings he did of his wife?
Oh, yeah, Lee. Yeah.
The Lee paintings. I think some of those have eyes rolling up or eyes sort of a little bit unfocused or whatever. And then Shaw, corpse Shaw, a mutated Shaw, has that same kind of clouded eye. So I'm wondering if there is any kind of deliberate symbolism with eyes here.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the creators that are contributing to the Alien movies are homaging Geiger, or they're sticking to the Geiger aesthetic in order to deliver the most alien and Geiger experience possible. So it definitely makes sense.
So did Geiger paint this for Alien, or does this predate that?
Yes, he painted it for Alien. He painted it in 1978, and right. The movie came out in 79. Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like the space jockey is implanting the facehugger onto another space jockey. So the implication there is that they're doing it to their own people.
Yeah, doing it on purpose. They know what it is, and they know what they're doing. And I guess it's kind of cool as well. We see the initial design for the space jockey with the long, elongated heads.
And a flat face.
Yeah, and you've got this elephant mask as well. The backpack is still there because you're holding on to the space jockey model now, aren't you? Yeah. So you can have a look how much of the design stayed the same in Prometheus.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these tubes are also flowing in the same direction and have almost the same kind of folds and stuff. It's very... they've definitely paid a lot of attention to detail there. The other thing I just know... Oh, maybe this is a punishment. Maybe this is how they treat their criminals. Maybe this is, instead of the guillotine, it's facehuggers.
I also just noticed as well this the figure in which this eye with the little squiggly baby is coming out is a lipped xenomorph leaning over, and the eye or the squiggly part coming out through the middle kind of looks like Shaw's cesarean later on in the movie.
Huh. I love that. I know I've mentioned it a few times before, but I love the idea of kind of an all you zombies. That's a short story by Heinlein. And yeah, it's where, I won't spoil it because it's great, but I'll just say that it's about a closed loop of time. I love the idea of the engineers create humanity, humanity creates the androids create xenomorphs, and then the space jockey kind of worships the xenomorph, and then that it just keeps going and going in a circle. It's just a recursive loop. I love that kind of trippy sci-fi shit.
Yeah, it's just so strange, the Alien universe timeline kind of just is kind of all over the place, at least to us right now, before all of the pieces fall into place and we kind of understand it a bit more.
It's always felt very claustrophobic. We don't get to see what Earth looks like. We don't get a look at society at large. It's always on a spaceship or on some remote planet somewhere. So yeah, maybe there's some weirder, bigger cosmic stuff going on that we couldn't even guess at. That's why I love Alien. You could really get your imagination going. You can go anywhere. This could become anything. And I love that Ridley Scott went, Xenomorph, we've done that, been there, seen what it can do. I don't think there's anything new to say. So why don't we focus on AI? Why don't we focus on engineers? I think that was a stroke of genius.
Yeah, I think if we focus too much on the alien, we may be in danger of explaining too much, because we do love the mystery about it.
Yeah, I think there's so much more to be uncovered in this universe. And I realized, well, especially with 3 and 4, because the studios went, we want to have Sigourney Weaver back, even if the story didn't necessarily need, especially with 4, I don't think that necessarily needed her. Yeah, it was very much the studio went, okay, this is what audiences love. They want Ripley fighting xenomorphs, keep doing that infinitum. But no, you're really closing off the universe to all its possibilities. And it's nice that, you know, love or hate the prequels, it's building this world. It's building better worlds, if you will.
Yeah, and I guess the introduction or the reintroduction of the pathogen or the accelerant or the black goo, whatever people want to call it, it's given us kind of spontaneity. There's no definite way that the black goo works. If also introduced, there's no definite time of what the alien incubates. All of this.
That's scary.
Yeah. Because
even if it's like someone's researched this and they go, okay, it normally takes like 12 hours, but you might be dead the next 2 hours. Oh, okay. I'm okay with that.
And I think the struggle of man trying to understand something that's unknowable is very universe aesthetic as well. Mm.
And it just occurred to me, maybe Holloway doesn't want to admit that he just saw a little worm in his eye because he thinks maybe it's because he wasn't wearing a helmet and he doesn't want to admit that he was wrong.
Yeah, that could be a possibility, because he wanted to prove that all man-made religions were false and crap. So it wouldn't surprise me that he would want to not be in the wrong in regards to safety and health.
Yeah, I don't think that he has made any connection between David offering him a drink and his current predicament. He probably doesn't even remember. He was probably so drunk that he's not even really fully cognizant of what went down.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think he honestly, that's the only explanation I can come up with, is because in interviews, all Logan Marshall Green has to say is, oh, you know, we're playing up that comedy of where people often, men especially, downplay how sick they are. And that's really all he had to say about it. But honestly, well, we can sort of extrapolate from that this guy doesn't like to admit that he's wrong. I can definitely imagine he's that kind of person. So, yeah, rest in peace. That's your own doing, I guess. You could have just gotten a tweezer and, you know. popped it out, but, well, this is the path you chose.
I didn't even want to think about having tweezers so close to my eye.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, there's a movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is by the guy who did Mandy. And this character wears contact lenses. And instead of just pulling them out with his fingers, he has these, they're like padded tweezers, not sharp tweezers, but he pulls them out with tweezers. No, 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 no. No, no, okay. Please, no.
I'm shuddering.
This episode, honestly, is the most disgusting episode I've done, and I apologize.
I'm not sorry at all. I'm having the time of my life.
Great, good. Sort of related to that, Patrick Willems, really great YouTuber. He does video essays on film and popular culture. And he does one about the Jurassic Park sequels, which I can link to in the footnotes. And I feel it's relevant to the Alien franchise as well, because Jurassic Park, the first one is all about the wonder of seeing this new world or discovering this world with the characters. And then the sequels just do the same thing over and over. So they went to Jurassic Park because they thought it was run by professionals. They thought it was a very safe place. It was all very new and exciting. But why go back to the island over and over again? And it's the same thing with, I think, Aliens, perfectly justified in that, well, we know it's dangerous. We are going in here armed to the teeth because we know what we're in for. That's great. That's a really clever justification. But with the Alien prequels, a lot of people accuse them of the same thing, of characters don't react like real world people would, that their motivations seem strange or just they're not relatable. So I think overall, the plot of Prometheus, they don't know what they're in for. They don't know they're in a dangerous situation. But once they do know, I mean, we've talked about Melbourne and Fifield already. Let's just focus on Holloway here. He's not reacting like a person would when they find a worm in their eye. And funny enough, I don't hear too many people complaining about this, but it is one of those things that kind of, it makes it harder for you to empathize with a character.
I think for him, he is kind of trying to brush off, like, oh, I'm just seeing things because I'm really hungover. It's the day after and I'm just seeing shit because, you know, I've been through a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him.
It would be good if there was, if there was another shot where he freaked out, stepped back, looked away, looked at the mirror again, and then it was gone. I think that, again, very tiny adjustments can really help to make us empathize with the character, to make us understand why he thought what he thought and did what he did. And I think, if you just had him look again and go, oh, no, it wasn't. I just hallucinated. It's fine. That's happened to me before, actually. Well, I've got hyperphantasia, and then with chronic fatigue, you do hallucinate sometimes because it causes inflammation of the brain. Fun times. But anyway, one time I was brushing my teeth, and then I spat the toothpaste out, and the water was red. I'm going, what the fuck? Am I bleeding? Nothing hurts. And then I spat again, or I rinsed the blood out of the sink, spat again, went, oh no, there's nothing there. I was just imagining it. That was very weird.
Yeah, I've had that sort of thing before where I was in the bathroom. I just finished brushing my hair and I put the brush down and I looked at my left forearm for some reason and it looks like there were some silver rainbow worms that came out of my arm and then went back in again. And I was like, it was really weird. They kind of look like little silverfish sluggy sort of things, but they were like very, very shiny.
Yeah, that lenticular.
Yeah, so it was like that sort of look and it totally freaked me out and I could feel them go back into my skin. And I was like rubbing my arm going, what? It's like looking at it. I was shaking my arm and there was nothing there. And I was like,
yeah, there's a name for it. Also,
that's weird.
It can be triggered by drugs or even withdrawal from medication. Not saying that's the case for you, but it is documented that such a phenomenon does happen. There's something in the brain that can be tripped to think that it's experiencing insects crawling on it, which seems to be a very innate instinct we have because they're dangerous. But what else? Yeah, like I've hallucinated like there was a floating moon face that was like Pac-Manning slowly towards me. That was scary. Another time.
That sounds really cute.
Yeah, but it looked like the Melis, Hergé Melis, is that his? I don't speak bloody French, but anyway, A Trip to the Moon.
Oh, yes.
It was that moon face. Yeah. But he was like doing this Pac-Man thing, he was floating. And there was another time where I thought, like, there was a patch of black faux fur just stuck to me. Like, I could feel the backing of fake fur, that sort of itchy stuff. I was like, what the? I thought I saw it at the corner of my eye, and I looked and I touched it. It was there and then disappeared. So, long story short, yeah, the human mind it guesses. It's all about approximation. We're not really perceiving reality as it is.
Yeah, it's amazing what a human mind can do to make you think that you've seen things or heard things, because it happens to many people.
I think if I were to do a Prometheus novelization, not saying that I will do that, but maybe, I don't know, you can't stop me and I can't stop myself. So, yeah, I would really love to get into Holloway's head in this scene and have him go, did I see that? Is that real? Just having that sort of very relatable situation of you get yourself so worked up that you're fine, but you've made yourself sick with anxiety.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, it is Yannick who is over the radio saying that everyone has to report to the bridge, and then he might have had this moment of, I better go to the med bay to get this checked out. And then the captain's going, no, you got to hurry your ass up, we've got to go. So,
well, I think that happens in the workplace as well, where it's just, once your boss shows up, like, okay, gotta report to duty, we're good.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of put any of your own medical concerns aside to kind of get the job done.
Yeah. My one last note is not actually related to this, but I always like to just keep scanning through the scripts for anything worth mentioning, bit of behind the scenes. I'll generally pick a scene that is very different. So I won't just read random sentences here and there, because I just don't think that's really worth our time. But I thought this one was, that in the Paradise script, David doesn't say big things have small beginnings. He instead says, here until the other side, no water but what we carry.
Isn't that from Lawrence of Arabia?
It is. It's before they cross the desert. Which I just don't see the relevance of that quote in that scene.
Yeah, maybe that's why it got cut.
Yeah, I see why they edited that out. Maybe Lindelof was just going through the Lawrence of Arabia script and just scrolled through randomly. That one, that'll do.
But you do see Charlie in every single scene. He's always got a drink in his hand, and he's at the pyramid. He's drinking water. You go through it back through Prometheus and you just watch, and just about every single scene he's swallowing something.
That's true. He's always got a drink in his hand or... I wonder if that's some kind of foreshadowing.
Perhaps. Yeah, maybe it was intentional that he was always going to go this way.
The only thing I could interpret from that quote... Well, I mean, the literal meaning is, we have only what we've got with us, and that should be enough for us to survive. So that has no relevance to an android who doesn't need anything. But I think the big...
Is it the statement for the human's sake, maybe?
Maybe. That here we go. This is... it all begins here. This is where the trial begins, the crossing of the desert. But it's far too abstract. I think big things have small beginnings. It's become so ubiquitous that anyone can pick up on the meaning of it. All right, that about covers it. This is called Signing Off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.
This is Mother 9000 of Studio Yutani signing off.